Ladies and gentlemen, today is what we think is going to be the last day and maybe the last hour of the KSFR fund drive. We've got $2,500 to go in this fund drive. We were off the air for the Radio Cafe and for the whole morning and through the new news on Friday. And so we were thinking about how important it is that people help us out because, you know, when you build in certain technical things whose names I don't exactly know very well, you can actually prevent transmitter outages like this one. But in any case, we are KSFR, Santa Fe Public Radio. We are listener-supported. We are non-commercial. It's the end of our fund drive, and we would like to help KSFR. We would like you to help KSFR make this the last day, the last hour. Our goal, and it's an ambitious goal, but our goal for this hour is $2,500. The telephone number is 428-1393, 428-1393. And what we're hoping is maybe we can get some, you know, $10 and $20 donations. Maybe we can get some large contributions now, too. If there's anybody there who is a real loyal listener to KSFR and does have perhaps a little more than the average person, maybe you could give a $500, $1,000 contribution to KSFR this morning on the Radio Cafe. If this station means that much to you, we certainly would love to hear from you and need to hear from you in order to stay on the air. 428-1393. I am delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Chuck Higgins. He is a candy maker. His company is called C.G. Higgins. They're at cghiggins.com. They're in two locations in Santa Fe, on Nunita and on Lincoln Avenue. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, good morning, Mary Charlotte. It's nice to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, it's great to have you. And we have, ladies and gentlemen, chocolate gift certificates available. It is not that the gift certificates are made of chocolate. They are made of paper. They will come to you in the mail, and then you can go redeem them for chocolate at either of the two locations. And to get those gift certificates, you can call 428-1393. We have a nice number of them, and so just give us a call right now. Now, how did you get started as a candy maker?
Well, that's a very interesting story. What happened was when I was about 12 years old, I had my first experience at a boutique candy shop where the family actually made the candy from scratch. And
where were you?
It was in northwest Iowa at Lake Okoboji.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's the resort area in Iowa. It's really a wonderful place. But so here in the middle of the amusement park was this homemade candy shop, and I had my first experience, and it was pivotal. Up to that point, it was always you buy a candy bar in the grocery store and you enjoy it and you go on from there. But all of a sudden it's like, wow, this stuff can really taste good.
And you didn't know how bad the other stuff tasted.
Not until
you
then.
Taste the good stuff.
Yeah. So my frame of reference was grocery store, and all of a sudden it's like my eyes were wide open, and I just, it was pivotal. It really was.
And so what happened then?
Well, over the years, I became acquainted with that family, and they shared a little bit of their technology and their creative candy making. And at one point, on kind of a whim, I applied for being a concessionaire at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival, which is in Shakopee, Minnesota. And I wiggled my way in at the last minute, and it was quite a circus. But I learned a lot really quickly, and all I sold was a homemade peanut roll. It was a Divinity Center, homemade caramel and nuts, peanuts on the outside. And the biggest problem was just keeping up with production. It's like we couldn't make them fast enough, which is, you know, a blessing and a curse at the same time.
Yeah.
But over the years, within the next couple, 3 years, I was probably the top-selling independent food vendor at the Renaissance Festival. I mean, you wouldn't believe how many nut rolls we went through at that time. So I did that for a few years, and then I sold the business and moved on to other variations, which took me to setting up a route for state fairs. So it was like the Iowa State Fair, the Minnesota State Fair, Arkansas State Fair, Florida State Fair, and on and on and on. And always trying new things. Over the years, I decided, well, you know, it'd be kind of cool to do the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. So I'd never been there, and yeah, I had an excuse to go. So,
where was that?
In Sturgis. You know, the motorcycle rally in Sturgis, South Dakota every year.
Okay.
And that was kind of an interesting experience. You know, Sturgis is this great little quiet little town in the Midwest, just like thousands of others. And I had the opportunity to drive through there on my way to Calgary, Canada, to do the Calgary Stampede. So I saw the town before the motorcycle rally and made all my arrangements. And then when I came back, it was like a totally different town. I'll just make it real quick. What they do is the bikers actually own most of the real estate. And they rent it out during the year to like a clothing store, a shoe store, and everything you would see on Main Street. But during bike week, what they do is they, the retailers remove all their inventory down to the bare walls. The bikers come in and they literally take the plate glass windows out of the front of the stores. And they vend on the street, so they can actually vend to people on the street. And you know, like for two or three blocks on Main Street, all you see is motorcycles backed up to the curb on both sides and backed up to each other in the middle of the street. So, I mean, they block it off to four-wheel traffic. And as motorcycles, as far as you can see, I mean, it's a cultural phenomenon. It's just really interesting. And as a vendor, every square inch of the town is spoken for because everybody wants to vend to the bikers.
And I'm sure they certainly need their candy.
Well, they did. And actually, it was the nicest group I've ever run across. I mean, they were, you know, polite and pleasant and were willing to part with their money, which was very helpful as well. But the interesting part is the town of Sturgis kind of has this unique situation, so just to put a tent up, you know, to vend out of, you have to get a building permit, and you have to buy their garbage bags that say Sturgis on them, so they can make money that way.
Right.
But the end result is they have this wonderful community center that they can use the rest of the year, which is very nice. And so there is, you know, the benefit for the city as well. And when Biker Week is over, they put the plate glass back into the windows, and the merchants move all their inventory back in, and it's like, we're back to normal. It's really, really interesting.
And so there you were. Did you do that year after year?
No, I just tried it once. And, like a lot of things, it's a lot of work. And the benefits were okay. But I just wanted to do it once just to see what it was like. And it was really kind of fun.
We're talking to Chuck Higgins from C.G. Higgins Candy Maker Chocolatier here in Santa Fe. The number is 428-1393. If you want to get some chocolate for yourself, you can give a call, 428-1393. Okay, so you were going around to things like motorcycle rallies, Chuck, and state fairs, and Renaissance festivals. Those are the ones where people dress up in costumes and get all into the sort of subculture. I've never been to one. I don't know what those subcultures are like.
It's really an amazing experience. If you imagine a state fair set back in maybe the 1300s or the 1400s, I mean, it's sort of like you move back in time. There's no visible use of electricity or running water.
But no one's being burned at the stake on the plus side.
I never saw that.
Excellent. No.
If they did it, I was not aware. But it was really fun, and the whole thing is just kind of great fun because you do this, you know, fake British accent, you know.
Right.
It's like, me lords and me ladies, come hither and sample the king's finest nuts.
The king's finest candy apples.
That's right.
Did different markets, like Renaissance fairs versus motorcycle rallies versus state fairs, have kind of different things that they liked?
Well, there is some of that. At the same time, you have to have your products approved by the organization. So as much as I wanted to do caramel apples at the Renaissance Festival, they were doing them themselves, which they refer to as the Queen's Apples. So we were disallowed to do that. And I always wanted to do some silly thing with chocolate dipped cherries or something, you know, so it'd be Queen's cherries, but that never went. So we just stuck with the nut rolls at that festival, and it was great fun. And of course, you have the costume with, you know, the baggy hats, and we wore queen size pantyhose and slippers, and I mean, it was really, it's just a hoot. And of course, you can't use loudspeakers, so we were hawking.
Right.
And we spent the entire day screaming our lungs off.
Luckily, you have a deep resonant voice.
And at the end of the day, there was no voice at all.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, well, that was really fun. But it was just Looney Tunes. It was a great way to spin off frustration and energy and just let it go.
I suppose that's why people go to things like that.
Oh, it's an alternate reality. And you step back in time, and everybody kind of gets in the mood, and it's really great fun. They have one street character called the Rat Catcher, and he's just this, you know, this ugly curmudgeon that wanders around the grounds, and if you interact with him, if he didn't insult you, you had a bad day. It's just amazing.
So you're waiting for your insult with bated
breath. That's right. Oh, where's the Rat Catcher? You know, and they have, you know, street entertainment too. You know, and there's always something going on. I mean, they'll have, all of a sudden somebody will just pick out a spot in the middle of the field and dump a bunch of props on the ground out of a burlap bag, and all of a sudden they have a crowd around them, and everybody's, oh, what's this? And they have this great little show, and it's all spontaneous. It's really kind of fun.
We're talking to Chuck Higgins of C.G. Higgins Candy Makers, 428-1393. And let's take a little trip over to the control room. We have some thank yous.
We certainly do. We want to thank Anonymous.
Oh, thank you.
Agnes Langdon.
Yay.
The Violin Shop of Santa Fe, who especially appreciates the BBC, Amy Goodman, and Brazilian music.
Yay.
Wesley from Los Alamos.
Thank you.
And Roe King.
Excellent. Keep those phone calls coming. Our goal for this hour is an ambitious $2,500, but here's how we can do it. If we have a bunch of people who sign up to be what's called sustaining members and give, let's say, $10 or $20 or maybe $30 a month to KSFR. $30 a month, of course, it's a dollar a day to hear KSFR, to have KSFR in your life every day. 428-1393. We can make our goal, and if we can make our goal by the end of news today, 9 o'clock news, the fun drive is done, and you won't have to hear any of this until the next one in the fall. And what you will hear is KSFR and all the programs that we offer. Uncommercial, non-commercial radio, 428-1393. Now back to Chuck Higgins, who's sitting here at the Santa Fe Baking Company, and I wanted to ask you, what are the basic ingredients of the candy that you make? I mean, I think that there's something to be said for, as I was talking to you the other day, and you said, what was it, ingredients whose names are pronounceable?
Yep, they're easy to read, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you look at the things in the grocery store or things that are prepared, you start going down this list of ingredients, and it's like, how do we pronounce that? So, in our particular case, let's take fudge, for example. When it comes to fudge, it has a very small list. Sugar, butter, evaporated milk, corn syrup, and chocolate. And maybe a touch of salt to enhance the flavor a little bit. And that's it. So, when you don't have preservatives in it, the shelf life is shorter. But that's okay, because the whole key is to have it fresh and wonderful.
And eat it right away.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, that's so good.
Now, corn syrup has gotten sort of a bad name, and I was looking at your ingredients, and I noticed it said low-fructose corn syrup as opposed to high-fructose corn syrup, which everybody's kind of always ragging on. Why do we need corn syrup in candy?
Well, it's a chemistry issue. In terms of the high-fructose, which has been getting all of the hype and all the negative publicity, the corn syrup we use is about the same as table sugar. You know, it does not have the high fructose element to it. And because of that, it's necessary to use in the candy, because if you look at candy recipes pretty much across the board, you'll always find some combination of sugar and corn syrup, like Karo, for example. And the idea is, it's a required ingredient because of the chemistry involved. If you don't have the corn syrup, your product will often sugar. You mix it up with whatever, you mix the sugar. Say, for example, you don't have corn syrup. So you put your recipe together and you make it, and it looks wonderful, but by the time you get to where you need to be on it, like the finished temperature, you pour it out and it all goes back to sugar. It just sugars.
So it kind of falls apart and crystallizes and does not have the texture or flavor that you're looking for?
It's not even close. Yeah. It's called trash. you just throw it away.
This sounds like a word spoken from experience.
Well, it is. I'll just tell you a little anecdote here real quick. One year I was making homemade peanut brittle at the Florida State Fair. And I had my recipe, and it was typically working very well, but I was making it at the Florida State Fair, and every time I got to temperature, I'd pour it out, and it would go back to sugar again. It would, you know, crystallize and go back to sugar. It was making me crazy, because I didn't know what to do, and I was still, you know, kind of young in the business. Well, to make a long story short, all I needed to do was just elevate the corn syrup a little bit, and I was fine. But I didn't know that. So I had these batches of peanut brittle I was just constantly throwing away, and I was just going nuts. No pun intended.
No pun intended.
And I had a person who was helping me out, and she was this older lady. She said, well, let me take a batch of that stuff back home with me to West Virginia, and I'm going to play with it and whatever. I said, fine, just get it out of here. So she came back a year later to help me at the fair. She said, you'll never believe what I did with that stuff. I said, well, so what did you do with it? And she said, well, I took it, and I did some stuff with it, and I used it as breading for chicken. I go, really? Well, at the same time, I was headquartered out of Arkansas, and Arkansas was real big about chicken, and they had this poultry federation, Arkansas Poultry Federation, and every year they have a cooking contest. So at one point, I put a recipe in, and they just totally ignored it. So after I talked to her, I said, So I came up with this recipe called peanut brittle chicken, and I took some peanut brittle and ground it up in the food processor with some flour and some cayenne pepper and some other goofy stuff. And I entered the contest, and I became a finalist, one of the 10 finalists in Arkansas. Of course, they take you to Hot Springs, Arkansas, and they put you in a motel room, and they have this little cook-off. You know, they have these stoves set up in the lobby. And believe it or not, I got second place in the state with my peanut brittle chicken.
Oh, my goodness.
Was that a hoot? Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, and it brings up this question of sweet and savory.
Exactly.
And what I think, I mean, if I recall correctly, which I probably don't, but when I was little, that wasn't around so much. I mean, now there's sea salt chocolate, and there's, of course, there's always been chicken mole.
Right.
But is that something that has become more popular over the last few decades?
I think it's an evolution in the culinary, taste of the public. For example, the sea salt on the caramel is a good one. Or, I put chili in a lot of products. You know, after I came to New Mexico, it was like, well, aren't you using red and green chili? And I go, really? Hadn't really thought about that. But, now we're doing some fun stuff like, chocolate raspberry chipotle fudge and, chili fudge. And then someone said, well, how come you're not using pine nuts? I go, oh, I can do that. So now we're using pine nuts on our caramel corn and various things. And somebody else came by and said, well, how come you're not using lavender? Oh, well, hadn't thought of that. So now we have this nice relationship with the lavender farm in Abiquiu.
Which I've heard is a wonderful place.
Oh, it is. And they just put a tea room in last year. So now they're able to entertain their people with all kinds of lavender products, some of which we make for them. And lavender is kind of a cool thing. We make a sipping chocolate out of it. I put it in fudge. We put it in caramel corns, and it's really a very nice indigenous, thing to put in some of these products, and it's really quite nice. But I wanted to say something really quick about your fundraiser.
Yes.
Well, I was listening to the radio all week long last week in anticipation of our non-event on Friday, because we were scheduled to be here on Friday.
That's when the transmitter went out, ladies and gentlemen.
That's when the transmitter went out. But it was kind of fun because I got to thinking about, what could I say about this fundraiser? And there's a couple things that I thought were very very interesting on my part. For example, has anybody thought about, taking their income tax refund and earmarking that for KSFR?
Nice.
That'd be a nice little touch.
Yes, it would indeed.
And, there's something else that came up, and that is I was listening all week, and I heard about these wonderful things people were saying about the programs. Like, there's this program, and there's Mary Charlotte's program, and there's CinemaScope, and all these great programs that KSFR does. And it occurred to me that there's something that KSFR doesn't do. There's some programs they don't do, which I was real excited about. For example, KSFR does not sell their soul for political ads.
Right.
And
that may be a public radio thing.
Well, it may be, but nonetheless, they're not there.
Yeah.
Which is the perfect part. In fact, I've talked to friends who would listen to other radio stations or television, and they say, I would give money not to have to listen to another political ad.
Yeah.
Well, this is a big opportunity.
Yeah. It's true. If and it's we don't have the political ads, and we also don't have that kind of a loud, aggressive commercial sound on the underwriting that we do have. We try to keep it to the point, tasteful, and pleasant to listen to, and also really informative. The people who underwrite for KSFR are people whose message our listeners want to hear in the first place, so it's not intrusive. And I love that idea. It's like, I would pay not to hear political advertising. So if you would be willing, give us a call, 428-1393, 428-1393. Tell us what you like, tell us what you don't like about this station. We often listen to the kind of feedback we get, and we improve based on what people are saying, kind of like the way people come in and say, hey, why haven't you tried lavender? And you say, ah, let's try lavender. You know, it's called being responsive to the community, being responsive to your, in our case, listeners, in your case, customers. And that's part of what public radio, particularly in a small market, is all about. 428-1393. We are coming up to, let's see, we're well over 20% of our goal. So that's good.
That's good.
But it's 8:30, so, you know, we got to get the whole, we got to get the 80% by the end of the hour. 428-1393. And let's take a little trip to the control room.
Good morning.
What's going on over there?
We want to thank Karen and Richard, who donated, but they wanted to say they missed Robert Knott singing.
You know, I missed that too. Robert Knott was sitting here. Chuck and Robert and I were sitting here listening and waiting for the transmitter to come on and hoping. But, you know,
he was singing to us.
He was singing to us. And if you had listened very carefully, you might have heard the vibrations of him singing in the cafe. But, you know, we'll get him on another Friday soon. Right now, Robert is on the last Friday of every month.
All right, so set your calendars right now. Put an appointment. Ask Siri to remind you.
Siri.
And we want to thank Joanna as well.
Thank you so much. Let's keep the phones ringing. 428-1393, 428-1393. So, okay, so we've been talking about some of the things that you put in chocolate, but and by the way, we're giving away gift certificates, ladies and gentlemen, for this fine chocolate, and not only chocolate but brittle and all the different kinds of things that you have in your stores. But walk us through, not that you're involved in the actual growing of the cocoa beans, but like, where does chocolate come from?
The chocolate comes from what we call Mesoamerica, in the middle of this hemisphere, if you will, and it's all imported, with one small exception. There is a state in this country that grows cacao beans.
Which one?
Well, I was going to let you guess.
New Mexico?
Nope.
I have no idea.
Hawaii.
Oh, of course. That makes sense.
Some of the plantations that were raising pineapple are shifting over to chocolate now.
Very interesting.
And actually, it's a very good product.
Meaning tasty and high quality?
Yes, it's really very, very pleasant. So, but the beans are grown and then they're processed. And some chocolate places will actually process the beans on premises, and we don't have the space to do that. So, you know, we try to buy a good grade of chocolate that's right up there, but not overly expensive, and incorporate that into some of the things we do. Now, you're talking about people giving us suggestions on what we could make and sell. One of the ones that really made me scratch my head was someone came in and they said, so how come you're not doing a blue cheese truffle?
And I just had a little reaction in my gut when you said that, and it was not happy. That sounds gross. Well, I'm sorry.
Well, you're not alone. You're really not alone. And it, like I said, it really, really struck me as odd. But being adventuresome and creative and what have you, I thought, well, all right, let's give that a try. And as it turns out, we can't keep them in stock.
What? Really?
Typically people either, you know, love them or hate them, but the larger group of people really like them. And everybody's surprised because blue cheese and truffle, well, blue cheese and chocolate is kind of like, are you sure? But when you bite into this truffle, what happens is the first thing you get is you get the chocolate ganache, and you have that chocolatey feeling washing over your taste buds. And then you ask yourself, I don't taste the blue cheese. But then what happens is the flavor of the blue cheese ramps up, and then it has this nice blue cheese finish to it. And it's that's the best I can describe it.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to have to go over to C.G. Higgins and try it for yourself. I wanted to ask you something. I probably could figure this out by looking it up. But, I mean, there's two meanings for truffle. One of them is mushroom, and one of them is chocolate.
Yes.
They're unrelated.
They have been unrelated up until about a year or two ago. And there's this individual in town who's actually come up with a truffle. I'm serious. He calls it a truffle.
Is it good?
Actually, it's...
Moving right along.
No, actually, it's kind of marks it as an aphrodisiac. I don't happen to be participating in that particular program, but I thought it was interesting. It was like somebody finally did it. They combined them both.
Excellent. Well, I mean, there is a long time association between sex, love, and chocolate.
Exactly.
I mean, Valentine's Day. What are your best times of year? Let me guess, Christmas and Valentine's Day?
Well, those are the two big ones. Mother's Day is pretty good. And, of course, Easter is right around the corner. So this is when we bring out the chocolate molds, and we do little chocolate bunnies and dark chocolate, milk chocolate, white chocolate. And we do something kind of interesting for Easter as well. And it's only like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday thing, just before Easter. And what we do is we take a little toy balloon, that you have as a kid, and you inflate it to a certain point, and then tie it off so it doesn't deflate. And then we take that, we dip the bottom of it in the chocolate, dark chocolate, and we pull it out, and we set it on the tray, and when it cools, we break the balloon, and now we have a chocolate bowl. And what we do is we fill it with like some chow mein noodles that have chocolate dribbled on top and some other little goodies, and we make some truffles that we sort of look like Easter eggs, and we put them all in there. And the fun part is we have a situation where we can get edible organic orchids. So when you...
Edible orchids?
Oh, yeah, they're great. I mean, it's more of a novelty than anything else, but you have this live orchid, sitting in this chocolate bowl with these little truffled Easter eggs, and you can eat the whole thing. Everything inside, the package, you can enjoy, and that's kind of fun. We do that only like Thursday, Friday, and Saturday before Easter.
428-1393 is the number. We're doing very well so far. We have exceeded a third, the one-third to our goal mark, but it's 20 minutes before the hour, so let's make the $2,500 goal for this hour, and that will end the KSFR Spring Fun Drive. And so if you want to go back to regular programming, help us out, support the Radio Cafe, support KSFR, and get yourself some chocolate. 428-1393. I shouldn't just say chocolate. It's all kinds of other things. My aunt and uncle were visiting from Germany recently, and they went to the New Mexico History Museum. And after they went to the museum, they went across the street to what I later figured out was your shop on Lincoln Avenue. But I didn't realize at the time that it was there, and so they came home and said, we have discovered something very, very good. What is it? Brittle. And they'd had your, I guess it was the chili pecan brittle.
I love your accent, by the way.
And they were going on and on about brittle. And that's what it was. And that, of course, has no chocolate in it. But it's, what's in it? Nuts and sugar?
Well, it's a hard candy with the nuts in it. And, of course, they may have had the chili version, which is where we put both red and green chili in it.
Now, is green chili... I always think of sweets as more compatible with red chili than green. Maybe that's not true.
Well, green has a unique flavor profile all its own. So, in my products, what I do is I use both red and green because they touch the taste buds in a different way, and you have more of a depth of flavor instead of just using one chili, like red, for example. I sort of envision it as sort of a level taste, but when you start adding the green chili to it, then you have more of a depth of profile, and to me it gives you a much better result. and now, it's really good.
Let's talk for a moment about Easter chocolate. By the way, I'm going to give the phone number one more time. I'm so eager to engage your help, ladies and gentlemen, in helping us reach our goal by the end of this hour. $2,500. We're a good chunk of the way there. 428-1393. When I was a little kid, you know, you'd go down to New York, visit all your Italian relatives, and they'd all give you very, very nice people, and they'd all give you white chocolate Easter bunnies. And I was a big chocolate eater, and I'd never had gourmet chocolate, I think, until I was in college, probably. But, and, you know, was a great fan of M&M's and, you know, Nestle's Crunch Bars and stuff like that. But even for me, not a connoisseur in any way, white chocolate Easter bunnies were disgusting. They tasted like a combination of candle wax and petroleum and sugar. They were so gross. And then, when I was in my 20s, I had, for the first time in my life, really good white chocolate. I think it was from Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And it was life-changing. It was like you're a 12-year-old, you know, you have that experience. And I was like, what is this? This is a revelation. First of all, what's in white chocolate that's different from dark chocolate?
White chocolate is basically the cocoa butter. I mean, that's basically what it is. But they have to add things to it so it doesn't run all over the place.
Now, dark chocolate is not cocoa butter?
No, it has the cocoa butter in it, but they leave everything, you know, in it as opposed to removing parts of it.
So it's white chocolate has things removed that are not removed from
the dark,
brown chocolate.
Right.
Okay.
Now, what you're experiencing as a young person probably is where they would actually add like wax to it, so it wouldn't melt in the summertime.
Right. Oh God, it was disgusting. And so white chocolate is basically another kind of chocolate. But when it's good, it's such a distinct and different flavor.
Yeah, they refer to it as the couverture.
Yeah, it's the what?
Like a couverture.
What's that?
Well, just a nice word for white chocolate, basically.
Okay.
But, you know, what we found in Santa Fe is people really lean towards a good quality dark chocolate the most.
That's because they remember those Easter bunnies.
Right. But, you know, my memory of Easter bunnies is a milk chocolate Easter bunny.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you have to chew the ears off first.
Right.
And then the rest is perfunctory, but...
Right, and then there are those little hard candy eyes.
In some cases,
yeah. Crunchy and not very good.
Well, by the way, I just mentioned real quick that we'll also be we're known for our signature chocolate dipped strawberries, so we'll have some of those from Easter weekend as well.
Excellent.
So we get the nice big gourmet strawberries and dip them in chocolate. They're really quite nice.
We're talking to Chuck Higgins of C.G. Higgins Chocolatiers. Two locations here in Santa Fe. Now, you are also known for something that is very close to my heart, which is dog friendliness.
Oh, yes. I had this interesting experience with the health department. My inspector came through one year and I said, tell me, what is all this paranoia about not having dogs in food places? I said, I don't understand it. My understanding is in Europe, dogs can come and go pretty much wherever their owners go. I said, but here in this country, it's like there's this paranoia thing going on. I'd like to have my customers come into my store and bring their dogs with them without having to be a service dog or a therapy dog. And I said, is there anything that can be done? He said, well, you can apply for a variance. I thought, well, that's novel. Let's apply for one. So I filled out all the paperwork and sent it in, and they sent me a certified letter and said, no way, Jose, it ain't going to happen. And I looked at the letter very carefully, and I saw this phone number and said, well, if you want to appeal this, call this number. I said, that's it. So I called the number and I said, you know, I disagree with this decision. I said, that's the wrong answer. You gave me the wrong answer. I don't like that answer. Let's talk. So we set up an appeal process, and what happened is I went into the meeting at the health department, and here's this big table with, like, I swear there must have been 8 or 9 health department people there, and I'm sitting at the very end, like, I'm conducting this thing. And I said, I'm not here to wrestle you to the ground. I just really feel that people should bring their dogs in. I mean, it's hot outside. You can't leave them in the car. It's cold outside. You don't want people taking the dogs out of the cars and stealing them. So why can't they just bring the dog inside? It's not that big a deal. And we sat there and we hammered out a way to do it. And the result was at the Nanita location, not the downtown one so much, but at the Nanita location, we actually have a waiver that says people can bring their dogs inside under certain circumstances. Like, number one, they have to be well-behaved, which is reasonable. And they can be in the sitting area, but not in the sales area, which is okay, too. I'm comfortable with that. And it's been a really nice thing to do. So we've gone from dog friendly to dog welcoming. And it's really kind of fun. I mean, we've had some monster dogs in there, and they take up practically the whole space, but it's kind of fun.
428-1393. If you like dogs and you like chocolate, you've come to the right place. Chuck Higgins is with us here in the baking company.
Just don't feed the chocolate to the dog.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the rule should be dogs can't go into the production area and lick the ingredients. That would be bad.
That's not permissible. That's
and they can't shake and shed their dog hair into the... We are well over halfway to our goal of $2,500 for this hour. We've got 15 minutes left. 428-1393, and we've got some more thank yous.
Yes, we've got some heroes here. Jacqueline, thank you.
Thank you.
Susan.
Yay.
Christy.
Thank you, Christy.
Graciela and Joanna.
Graciela and Joanna, thank you.
And Kate, who says Mary Charlotte is awesome.
Well, Kate, you're awesome, and all of our donors are awesome. 428-1393, do we have any of the chocolate gift certificates left? Do we know?
I'll check on that.
Okay. 428-1393 is the number. Help us reach the goal of $2,500 and actually end the fund drive in the next 14 minutes and 10 seconds, which is what we've got left before the end of this show. 428-1393. Now, you, Chuck, were featured on the Food Network.
Yes, I was. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that experience.
Well, that was kind of fun. This call came in, and they said, you know, we're from New York, and we have this program, and we'd like to have you send us some samples. And I'm kind of a pushover, so I sent them some things, and about 3 weeks went by, and I saved the phone number, and I called them back, and I said, hey, I sent you the samples. What's going on here? They go, oh, well, you know, it's the Food Channel Network. I mean, of course, people can call you up and tell you they're anybody, which has happened. And a lot of things have been sent out on a wild goose chase. But
people call you up and say,
they make up
I'm
stuff.
From Travel and Leisure,
yeah,
and
exactly.
It's just somebody who wants some chocolate?
Yeah, that happens.
Oh, my goodness.
So in this particular case, I called them up. I was getting a little bit miffed, and I go, okay, let's call these people up and harass them a little bit. Okay, so what's going on? I said, oh, well, you know, we're going to do this food thing in Santa Fe, and we like what you do, and we settled on the chili pecan brittle. And the name of the show was Road Tasted by the Neelys, which is the couple from, I believe it's Memphis, that do the barbecue stuff. And they go all over the country and they do cool stuff. So they came to Santa Fe, and sure enough, they pulled in my driveway, and we had it all set up. The interesting part I thought was kind of a kick was, so they come in and they have their makeup people, and they have their audio people, and they have their film people, and they had all this entourage. And I said, well, I don't get any makeup. Then I realized at that point that I was the window dressing. The show was all about them. I just happened to
goodness.
Be part of it.
Oh, my goodness.
So I didn't get any makeup, but, you know, they don't show my face that much anyway. So, and we did. We made chili pecan brittle in the kitchen, and we had it all set up, and we talked about stuff, and it was really kind of fun. The interesting part was before the show came out on the air, I communicated with the people who were organizing it, and I said, well, you know, I'd like to be able to hype this thing locally and tell the local media and say, hey, we're going to be on the Food Channel Network. And they said, no, we want to control the message, so just don't say anything. Well, they controlled it so well, nobody knew it.
Oh.
And it was really a disappointment. And the second disappointment was, you know, they had a scheduled date to show the show, and I was all excited and gearing up for it. And then they called and said, no, we're going to move it to a week later. Well, that seemed perfectly okay. But what happened was, a week later, was when the Olympic competition was having their swimming event, and millions of people were watching the Olympics instead of the Food Channel Network. So all this audience that was supposed to be there that night wasn't. I mean, we were told that we're going to have like all kinds of... all kinds of like phone calls coming in and orders coming in, and I think we had like six.
Oh my
goodness. Because nobody was watching the show.
Oh. So, now, can you, do you ever, are you able to show the video?
Well, they've repeated a few times.
Uh-huh.
And we put the video up on the website without the commercials, so it doesn't take very long. But, so, you know, there was a spinoff at a couple future dates, but it was never this big, huge impact that everybody thought it would be.
Right.
But it was fun. I mean, it was a great experience, and I met the folks, and it was a nice thing to put on the resume.
And of course, those folks, they want to come to Santa Fe because, I mean, they are, of all the places that they can go because they travel around the country, they want to go to places that are nice.
And we've had people come in, you know, this is like 4 or 5 years ago, and people are still coming in saying, oh, I saw you on the Food Channel Network. So, you know, there was a residual benefit to it, and it was a nice experience, and it was a nice thing to have happen.
We are talking to Chuck Higgins. We've got 10 minutes left in the show, and we want to thank Ben Swan for his contribution to KSFR, and we would like very much to get your input. I just got a message that the $2,500 number is not quite right to end the fund drive. So I'm not sure, but we're going for that goal anyway. We're going for the $2,500 goal, and we want to get this fund drive over this morning. So give a call, 428-1393, and help us make the Radio Cafe the place where you have called, you have made your contribution, you have said, I support public radio, I support dogs, I support chocolate, I support the local scene. I mean, this is one of the things that we can do here on KSFR that so many public radio stations really don't do, which is, I mean, they're great. They play a lot of wonderful programs, national programs, but being able to really, really feature and highlight what's going on here in the community is something that we have committed to here at KSFR, and it's very, very important to us. 428-1393 is the number. And help us get there.
I want to say something about Ben Swan. He's with the animal shelter.
Yes, so, indeed. We've had him on so many times on this program.
Well, you know, I want to say a special thanks to Ben. He's been a really great asset to the community. And I don't know if his contribution had anything to do with our dog welcoming policy, but it does seem kind of special.
Yeah. Now, do you have a dog?
I had a dog for quite a while. The last one left this planet about a year ago, but the two cats are happy, and they're both rescue cats, basically.
Now, you started, as we talked about earlier, doing state fairs, selling all kinds of candy there, and what I love is it's really the whole range from, and not even that these terms really mean anything, but, you know, high-end to low-end. I mean, you were selling the finest chocolates that you know you can make, and at the same time, caramel like apples with warm caramel poured over them, and cotton candy.
Yeah, I held off on cotton candy for the longest time, thinking it was beneath my dignity. But when I finally decided to do it, I said, "Okay, how can we make cotton candy unique and special?" And I introduced it in the New Mexico State Fair, which I just finished my 20th year at the New Mexico State Fair in 2013. And because they opened the downtown store, I decided to step back from the state fair, and somebody else has taken over that space now. But at the state fair, we were known as Chuck's Nuts. And it's a name nobody forgets.
Right.
But in Santa Fe, that name isn't really that applicable because I'm not really a nut company. It was really more a statement of my mental health. Because you have to be crazy to be doing state fairs for 20 years. But anyway, it was a wonderful experience in Albuquerque for 20 years at the State Fair. And it was a case where you have to sort of tailor your product to the audience. And chocolate in a hot State Fair environment really isn't the wisest thing. So in the alternative, the nut rolls, the caramel apples on a stick, caramel apples in a dish, that's what you're referring to. Where we take an apple, we slice it up, take the core out, and put it in a bowl and slather homemade caramel sauce on top. It's actually incredible. And did those, in fact, that was probably the biggest selling item at the fair. because you can share it with a friend. You can put as much or as little caramel on the apple as you want. It doesn't pull your teeth out. And it was fun watching people lick the bowls. It was
Now, but so. Okay, but let's go back to the cotton candy,
okay.
Because I have memories of going to amusement, you know, going to amusement park when I was a little kid and eating cotton candy, and it was really like the most heavenly thing that I had ever experienced, putting your mouth on this thing that looks like cotton and having it melt in your mouth in that way.
Exactly.
What do you bring to it?
Well, it was a challenge. What happened was, for the longest time, there was a individual doing cotton candy in the sheep barn, you know, which is like a block away from where I had my booth at the state fair. And because they were in the sheep barn, they came up with this cotton candy presentation that looked like a shaggy sheep. They, you know, had the stick, and then they would start piling this stuff on, and if you layer it just right, it would just hang there like a shaggy sheep. And that was their signature. Well, they retired, and it was kind of a monster cotton candy. So they retired, and customers were winding around the fairgrounds going, where do we get something like that? So that was a niche that I just kind of stepped into. And we started doing the monster cotton candies. And monster cotton candy is so big that if a kid holds it up, all you see is, you see the kid from the knees on down. And that's all you see is just cotton candy with legs.
And cotton candy with legs, ladies and gentlemen.
That's what it looks like. And what's fun about it is, you know, the whole family can eat on it for a week if it lasts that long.
Well, yeah, and you know, you got to then have your vegetables afterwards so that you kind of like stay sane.
Right. That's why you have the caramel apple in a dish so you can have your fruit.
That's right.
Yeah, it's good for you.
It's one of the food groups.
And we did, you know, chocolate dipped strawberries like we're going to be doing for Easter, for example. We'll have some chocolate dipped strawberries, and. You know, you try to play with it and have some fun. And that's how you make cotton candy a little bit off the wall and weird. Just do something different with it.
The number here is 428-1393, 428-1393. And we've got three minutes left before the end of the hour. Not sure we're going to reach our 2,500, but, you know, we'll do the best we can. We'll get as close as we can. 428-1393, please support KSFR and the Radio Cafe. Now, Chuck, are you a public radio listener? Do you listen to this station, to this show?
A great deal, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. And I love what KSFR does. I really enjoy the programs. BBC is very helpful. You know, they're very informative, and I'm not always pleased at what I'm hearing, but that's not their job. You know, their job is to report the news. So,
Meaning the world is not made of pecans and caramel.
And rainbows and
fluffy puppies.
And unicorns.
Right.
But I really like this one, and I enjoy public radio no matter where I go. And I really value it because it really is a nice alternative to the mainstream and the hype.
428-1393 is the number. Now, you make candy all day, and yet you stay trim and fit. How do you do it?
Well, I don't eat everything I make. I mean, some of it you have to hold back to sell. But I do sample things as we go along. And part of the job...
For quality control.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if it's not good enough for me, it's not good enough to sell. And the other thing is, also involves, like, carrying 25-pound bags of sugar and 60-pound buckets of corn syrup and moving product around. And I pretty much stay on the run most of the time. I want to say one more thing real quick. Coming up in May, from May 24th through through the 31st, May 24th through the 31st, we're having a Jewish film festival, and we're kind of partnering that a little bit. Our downtown store is going to be sort of a quasi-café noir, which was typical of the time between the two World Wars, 1 and 2.
Okay.
And the Jewish Film Festival is working with us on that, and we're going to do some like special desserts that would be indigenous of the time. Anyway, this will be kind of fun.
Chuck Higgins, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. Chuck Higgins of C.G. Higgins, which is at 847 Niñita Street, which is on the corner of St. Francis and Niñita, which is just north of the intersection with Cerrillos Road. And they're also downtown at 130 Lincoln Avenue, across from the New Mexico History Museum. there on the web at cghiggins.com. Thank you so much for being with us.
It was a treat and a pleasure. Thank you so much.
A treat. And ladies and gentlemen, there are still some gift certificates for the candy left. And so please give a call and get your hands on some of those and go treat yourself to some sweets. But most of all, treat yourself to public radio and the benefits that it gives you, both medicinal and spiritual. 428-1393 is the number here on KSFR.